Episode 5, My New Life. The 24th, a day I'd been preparing myself for. I later found out that some of the family suffered on that day, probably because reality set in, but not for me. I was fine. I'd prepared myself for weeks against the risk of sinking into depression, and it worked. I decided to stay sober at the wake, so I could keep my head and emotions in check. It was a big day with a lot of people, and it needed to go well. I had a couple of drinks at the very end, when people started to leave, and therefore, I had a clear head the next morning, and was ready for my new life. The 24th was actually quite a good day. I was really happy with the way that the funeral had gone, and especially the way that Julie had been respected by everyone. The one thing I wasn't was relieved. I'd convinced myself prior to the funeral that we had done everything we could to respect Julie, and the rest was in the lap of the gods. Unfortunately, the gods had been kind to us. In life, I've learnt to realise what you can control and what you can't. The more confidence and momentum you have, the more positive energies you create. And the more experienced you are at creating positive energies, the more control you have over them, and generally, the more positive outcomes you get. Some people might call it making your own luck. Making things work for you is a skill. There's no luck involved, and it's about being positive in your abilities and gaining momentum. It's no coincidence that the so-called luck happens for confident people. I'm never concerned if things don't work out exactly the way I want them to. What will be, will be. One of my best friends, Rob, called round to see me. It seems all my friends are called Rob. I always enjoy Rob's company, as we're on the same wavelength. He stayed for a while and Julie sends a clear sign to him to say hello. Rob's a believer. His spiritual door is open. I'm not shocked by any of the signs, I'm so used to them. Julie sent so many now, it's a real comfort to me, and to Rob. I'm going away for 4 days on Monday. My daughter and her fiancé thought it would be good for us all to get away and relax. It's really nice of them, but to be truthful, I'm not too excited about going. I'm not too excited about doing anything, to be frank. I've been a bit snappy at times over stupid things. Nothing long-winded, but I'm just struggling a bit. No matter how hard I try, the constant effort of coming to terms with the situation, coping with the immense sorrow and keeping my chin up is taking its toll. It's wearing me out. Maybe getting away is a good thing. The third day on holiday was a landmark day. It was the first day I hadn't cried since Julie died. That's 33 days of tears. I'm not taking anything for granted, but I feel a bit better for having a day off, so to speak. I wake up early on the third day and decide I need to ensure Julie's okay. I need to contact her properly. I make contact with a renowned medium. If I'm going to do this, I'm only going for the best. June Field. June is so well known globally that the nearest date I can get a private visit is in 6 months' time. In London, 180 miles away. At this time in my life, I feel I need to see her. The mini break has gone well, and I'm glad I went. I've enjoyed it. The funeral is still fresh in my mind. Rob, the funeral director, has contacted me to say that Julie's ashes are ready for collection. I've decided to pick them up on the way home. When I get there, Rob gives me a gift that makes me melt. Along with the ashes, he hands me a beautiful wooden heart that splits in two like an apple that's been cut in half. Inside is a small bottle of Julie's ashes on one side and a photo of her on the other. It's such a beautiful gift to receive, it really is, and I'm so grateful. This just tops off an amazing performance from Rob. From the word go, I've known he was the right person to honour and respect my wife. Such a beautiful gesture. I take Julie back home and place her in the lounge next to a photograph and a copy of the service card from the funeral. She's now back where she belongs. I feel better about that now. I feel better that she's with me again. The thought of finding a counsellor is on my mind now. I've never been to counselling, but I know it's the right thing to do. I also have a meeting at Julie's Works to tie up a few loose ends. The respect Julie's Works have for her and the attendance of work colleagues at the funeral is very touching. I meet a lady called Nikki, who's in charge of human resources. I've met a few of Julie's colleagues before, but not Nikki. I find that Nikki has a background in psychology and very kindly spent a couple of hours of her time with me, mainly talking about my future and the way I'd handle things following Julie's death. The following morning I felt that little bit better for talking to Nikki, as if a few rough edges were now that little bit smoother. Blame is a big thing in bereavement. I know I did everything I could for Julie, but as I mentioned before, when you really love someone, you feel that you could have done better. After speaking to Nikki, that guilt started to subside. I mentioned to her that I want to totally open up about my childhood, life and bereavement. She recommends that I speak to a psychotherapist, not a counsellor. This makes perfect sense to me. I'd actually been asked by a friend if I'd consider going to group therapy. Now, this is a horses for courses moment, and if it works for you, then great, but it's definitely not for me. I see it as spreading grief. It's like the group's sorrow is piled up in the middle, mixed together and then spread out into a thin layer. Everyone feels better, but nobody actually gets rid of the sorrow. It's safety in numbers. The common denominator is death and sorrow. I don't understand how you can truly stand up straight again. You have everybody else's sorrow mixed in with your own. I get that you don't feel alone. I get that you can console each other. I get that somebody else might be in a worse position than you, and therefore that brings some form of relief to you in your predicament. I also get that helping others can be a help and a distraction from your own plight. But on the other hand, how do you ever get away from the sorrow? If you make friends within the group and meet up, the reminder of sorrow is always there. If you go out for a drink with a workmate, what do you end up talking about? Work. It's the same thing. Do you ever truly clear yourself of the trauma when you're constantly reminded? When you're shouldering each other's burden? How do you fully move forward? How can you ever stand up straight again? You're not thinking for yourself, you're thinking as a group. Remember, we're all different, so we need to think for ourselves because, as I said at the very start, your grief is different to mine. There's something else that I'm struggling with. In fact, I'm finding it very disrespectful towards Julie and myself. People are saying things like, you'll meet someone else. I know people are trying to help, but I really don't want to hear this. It makes me so angry. From the moment I met Julie 29 years ago, I never wanted to be with anyone else. Why are people saying this? I truly want to dress in black for the rest of my life as a signal to tell people to back off. I suddenly understand why widows in religious countries permanently dress in black after their husbands die. It shows respect to the deceased, and that's honestly the way I felt. Another thing that isn't helping is that I just want away from this life. Nothing's changed. I miss Julie so much, and I just can't see how I'm going to make it through the next 40 years without her. I take my vitamins and minerals every morning and keep asking myself, why am I taking them? Why am I making myself healthier? I really don't want to be here anymore. It's a really weird feeling. I'm not one to give up. Like it or not, I've always found a way to get through some really tough periods in my life. Long sustained periods. Periods which I reckon would break most people. But I've always held in there and got through it. But this is different. People are telling me how well I'm doing. I appreciate the support, but only if they knew how I really felt. The trip away with my daughter has really made me think. When my auntie died 10 plus years ago, my uncle grabbed the bull by the horns and started to go on holiday on his own. I knew that couldn't be easy for him travelling, eating, sleeping on his own for the first time in a foreign land. I admired his bravery for pushing himself into a corner. I need to get away on my own. go on holiday on my own for the first time, push myself into a corner and come out fighting, kickstart my life again. It's been a couple of weeks since the funeral, and I've been searching for a psychotherapist. Over the years, when looking for anything like a holiday place to stay or a specialist of some description, I always seem to come up trumps. I have this system when looking on the internet. I tend to keep ignoring a place or person. They keep jumping out at me, and I keep ignoring them for one reason or another. Then eventually, I know they're the right choice. This happened with my psychotherapist. He kept jumping out at me, but I wanted somebody totally neutral, and he was only a few miles away from where I lived. I didn't want him to know me or Julie or one of our family and friends. After him jumping out at me for a couple of weeks, I knew he was the right person. I booked an appointment. I remember it well. I wasn't nervous or worried. He was there to help me. Why would I be nervous or worried? Alva was originally from the Midlands and of Caribbean descent and had that nice laid-back feel to him. I remember saying hello, shaking his hand and sitting on the couch. After a few pleasantries, he asked me what he could do for me. I pointed to this imaginary bag on the floor and said, "I've got this bag that's full of all my problems I've had since childhood, and I've been dragging it around with me all my life. I've got rid of some of it by sorting things out myself. But now my wife has just died and the bag's full up again, and I want us to empty it as much as possible, as I'm not prepared to drag this around with me for the rest of my life." I then turned to Alva and said, "And I don't want you to appease me. If you don't like me or something I say, I want you to tell me." I don't know what Alva thought about me saying this to him, but I later found out that he was definitely the right person to help me. We're both straight talking and generally have the same kind of views. I started therapy twice a week, then quickly down to weekly, then fortnightly, then monthly, then 3-monthly. Alva let me heal myself by letting me talk while carefully guiding me. I recovered in record time. I still see Alva every 6 months. I don't really need to. But it's important to remind yourself on how far you've come. And also it's important to keep in contact in case of a lapse or any little issue that needs ironing out. I also feel that the continuing contact reminds Alva of what a great job he did for me. A true success story. It's a pat on the back for him. The feel-good factor. I've learned a lot from Alva and I hope he's learned a bit from me. I would say we've become quite good friends. I enjoy seeing him and I hope he feels the same way. Therapy is so important if you want to stand up straight again. Think of life as climbing a tree and think of therapy in the same way. Firstly, get a good foothold by choosing the right person to help you. Stay as near to the trunk as possible. The trunk is straight and strong. It won't let you down. Don't wander along the branches. Branches will lead you astray and can snap at any time, sending you tumbling. As you talk to a good psychotherapist, they will discreetly guide you back to the trunk when they feel you are wandering towards the branches. With their guidance, you will safely climb to the top of the tree, and when you stand at the summit, you will have a clear view of the world before you. We can all survive trauma, but few will ever stand up straight again. People are there to help you, so let them help you. A very bizarre thing has started to happen at home. Since Julie died, I found myself sitting in her seat on the couch. I didn't do this purposely, and it's something I'd never done before, but I just find myself there. Julie's seat was the only seat that was worn, so it wasn't as comfortable as where I sat, but for some reason, that's where I'd find myself. Since I got back from the break with my daughter, each time I sat on the couch, no matter what time of day or night it was, I'd melt into the couch, physically and spiritually. It'd feel as if I was totally drifting away in a trance. It wouldn't happen anywhere else, just on the couch. It was the same psychedelic feeling I had in hospital when Julie died, but more intense. a real buzzing inside, a drifting away, a sinking feeling. It was as if it was making me think, really holding me down and forcing me to think. I'd melt into myself and really think deeply. Thinking deeply is something I gained the ability to do when I learned to control my energies nearly 20 years earlier. Looking deep inside myself, finding a solution, being honest with myself, using my energies to the full. But this was on a different level. I started to see a path. I wasn't depressed, so I was never going to commit suicide. Yeah, I didn't want to be on this earth any longer. In fact, I would have done anything to leave this earth. But I was far too healthy to just die, and I knew that. So I was stuck here, like it or not. There was a route out of this misery. The pin man appeared in my head, pushing the ball of life. The word pragmatic shone in neon. That time on the couch was a vital moment in my recovery. It was the very start of my plan to try and turn this full circle and make the most out of the situation. I forget how long this actually lasted, but it was probably about 4 weeks or so. During this time, two major things occurred to me. The first thing was, I went back to God. Did I go back because I wanted to appease myself that Julie was safe in heaven? No, though I can't deny that this hasn't helped my mental state. During the time I had to think, I realised that I'd never moved away from God. Stubbornness as a child and the hypocrisy in my own religion was the reason why I drifted away from God. I was brought up in an Irish Catholic family. I went to Catholic school and Catholic church. Even at such an early age, I knew what went on in the Catholic faith at that time. The abuse within the church was an ongoing joke. Everyone knew about it. Nobody did anything about it in them days. The comedians even made jokes about it. Society turned a blind eye. I knew what was going on behind closed doors. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good and bad in every faith. There were a lot of really good people, a lot of beautiful families, but there was a lot of wrongdoing as well. You were looked upon as a pillar of the community if you were involved with the church. Some were anything but. And even at such an early age, the hypocrisy was overwhelming me. The final nail in the coffin came in a religious education class when I was about 14. The deputy head was taking the class and he was harping on about Jesus being an ordinary man. I asked him, how could Jesus be an ordinary man if he was born by the Virgin Mary? Without answering, he instantly sent me out of the room and told me he'd see to me later. That was the end of me and God. Though, when I look back after that point, I always had a thought for God, and deep down I must have truly believed. I suppose I'd never really stopped believing in him. It was the Catholic Church that I'd erased from my life, rid myself of the hypocrisy. In my life, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. It's as black and white as that, and it doesn't matter who you are, even close family. If somebody asked me if I believed in God, I'd reply no. But then I'd go on to say, but what does make me think he might exist is the story of Adam and Eve, used as an example of temptation in life. God basically said, enjoy all what grows in the Garden of Eden, but don't touch the apples from that tree. Now the earth has all the natural cures to all the illnesses that man has created. They're all hidden within nature. We've found many of them, but are we going to cut down the forests, pollute the rivers, kill the wildlife, overfish the oceans, ruin the ecosystem, damage the environment through greed, before we found the rest of the natural cures hidden on the earth? Where do you think all these cures have come from? Did they just suddenly appear, or did somebody put them there in the first place? Is the way we polluted the environment the reason for our rise in our mental health and cancers? Is greed to blame? Rule number one, life is a test. Here's greed, are you tempted? Here's the apple. Are you going to bite it? The other thing that I realised was something incredible. But when I look back on my life, it made perfect sense. In fact, I couldn't believe I hadn't realised it before. I had a guardian angel. Those decisive moments in my life where it could have ended up so differently. Those incredibly difficult moments in my life where it was easier to give up. The way I always made the right choice, though it was the harder option. The voice in my head that instantly answered the questions that were troubling me. The answers I didn't know. The way the voice in my head was mine, yet the wording would be in a way that I wouldn't have used. A look at the way I met Julie, as if we'd been purposely pushed together. The way I searched for a week to find her after seeing her walking down the road and saying to my mate, I'm going to be with that girl. The need for us to be together, to help each other be better people. We so needed each other. The tests that have been put before me in my life. The way I feel I have grown as a person. The way I'd put others first. Helping people makes me happy. It's honestly the only thing I'm passionate about. I feel my guardian angel has done a really good job on me, leading me, advising me, guiding me to be the person I've ended up being, and luckily, I've had the ability to listen. I was a very troubled soul when I was younger. My path could have been easily so different. But somehow, I've ended up being me. I look at all the people I've met by so-called coincidence. These people have either had an effect on my life in wisdom or guided me to my next port of call. I've learned so much in life. I've taken note of everything. I see things differently to most people and I try and do what's right by others. I look back at the sudden calmness that came over me when Julie died and when the hearse pulled up outside the house. I knew I was not alone. I keep looking back nearly 20 years ago when I realised that coincidence wasn't coincidence. When I realised that I could make things happen by using my mind. When I started to control and build my energies but refused to read about it. To build them organically and not be swayed by the thoughts or methods of others. And then year upon year I grew stronger in my spiritual abilities and wisdom. 20 years ago did my guardian angel start preparing me so I was ready for when my world would be turned upside down. When I lost the love of my life, the make or break moment. I think so. Was I seen as a good candidate to ride the biggest storm and then help others in my position by telling them how I'd survived and thrived, giving them the opportunity to truly live again? To stand up straight again and make the most of this amazing gift that we've been given. The gift of life. I have my guardian angel to thank for everything. Spiritually, I've seen things that some people do, but most people don't. That opens up your eyes to a whole different world with different possibilities. It stops you being blinkered like most people. People who refuse to see anything other than so-called fact. They're scared of being wrong, scared of saying something that others might scoff at. They've gained knowledge but lost wisdom. It's a weakness. It's all about belief and faith. I have both. I feel blessed. I truly do. Even though there's still tremendous sadness, tears and confusion regarding Julie's death, I'm becoming more and more thankful to God for taking her from the pain and misery she was in. That misery could have gone on for months. She would have hated that, and seeing her in that amount of pain and discomfort would have been hard to take. It truly was the kindest thing that could have happened to her. And with the thought that my Nana was waiting for her, and the incredible inner strength and courage that Julie possessed. I knew she was as prepared as she could be to embark on the journey from this world into the next. I decided to compose my own prayer to thank God, my guardian angel and my spiritual helpers for looking after Julie and providing a safe and smooth passage to heaven. It's more of a poem than a prayer. Even though I say so myself, it's quite lovely. A little emotional but lovely. I don't say any of the traditional prayers. Why would I? God didn't compose them. I love visiting churches to look at the architecture and think about the history, but I don't go to church to worship and have no intention on doing so. God didn't build them churches. As far as I'm concerned, when those grand churches were built, they were built for control and power over the community. I'm not against anybody saying traditional prayers and going to church. I totally understand why people go. But it's all about your own faith and belief. I see it this way. When following your favourite sports team, some people insist on going to the stadium to watch them every week. Some go every so often. Some are happy to just watch them on TV. Some of them listen to them on the radio, and some will just catch the scores in the newspaper the following day. They all have one thing in common. They all support and love their team. And really, nobody is more of a supporter of their team than anybody else's. Is somebody who can easily afford to go to the stadium every week more of a supporter than someone who has to save up to go twice a year, or someone who is not able to go but makes sure that they listen to their team on the radio? I know I'm on God's team. I also know I'll never be a star performer, but I know I give a solid performance every week, and I also know He'll never substitute me. I have total faith in God, myself, what I do, and the person I am. I know God's happy with me, and that's all that matters. As a self-employed joiner, I work alone, and as a follower of the good Lord, I walk alone. It's just me and God, and that's just how it'll be on the final day. With God on my side and my guardian angel guiding me, a make or break decision before heading north to my spiritual home starts to turn my fortunes full circle, and Julie reminds me of a present she'd once bought me.